Chof Tishri, Thursday the 12th of September, Rabbi Shimon Black, Yichus of Esroigim.
Good morning. Shir's going to be on Yichus of Esroigim. I thank you for inviting me to speak, and hopefully you'll gain from it. I'm greatly honoured by it. The outline of the Shir today is I'm going to give a basic introduction why I'm speaking. Why I'm speaking during the Sesh Yimei Teshuvah, and why not next week, before Sukkot. And then I'm going to define how the Torah defines an Esrog. And then I'm going to go into a bit of the science of Esrogim, and whether all Esrogim are related to each other or not. And then I'm going to discuss about grafting, and bringing some of the Shittas and Halacha. We'll touch on it. And then I'll go into the science of grafting, and then we'll go hopefully into the different, I don't know, types or brands of Esrogim. And if we have time, we'll talk about the Gartel on Esrog, and hopefully, again, if we have time, that we'll talk about some of the archaeological evidence as well. So why am I speaking now and not next week? So, you've probably already bought it by next week, but there's a machlokas in Halacha where, when you should buy the Lulav and Esrog. Should you buy it this week or next week? So, the Shem Shmuel brings that many tzaddikim bought it next week, and this could be explained by Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer explains it in one of his drashas. He says that there's a midrash that explains why do we take Lulav and Esrog on Sukkos. He explains it's a celebratory alms, and you're walking around the bima, you're celebrating that you've come out zakai b'din, that you've come out innocent on Yom Kippur. But if you buy your lulav and esrog early, before you become zakai, before you become innocent, then you're like jumping the gun a bit, and therefore one should only buy it afterwards. The Matar Ephraim argues, and he says that you should buy it this week in order that one should have as many zechusim as possible to become zakai b'din. So that's why maybe I'm speaking this week and not next week. So how does the Torah define esrog? It says, "Lekachtem lochem pri eitz hodo." So if you didn't have Torah shebal peh, like the Karak, as reported in Jerusalem Post in 2010, says that they took any beautiful fruit. It said pri eitz hodo, beautiful fruit. They take olives or lemons or pomegranates, but because we rely on Torah Shabbal Peh, we know that Pri Eitz Hodo means an esrog. And the Gemara brings different drashas. Again, I'm not going to have time to go through the drashas, but it has brings three different drashas why Pri Eitz Hodo might be referring to an esrog. The Rambam in his Perush Mishnayos, Hakdama Perush Mishnayos, says, "V'lomot sinu gamkei machlokas b'mash amish shekosu pri eitz hoda at yoma echot shu esrog v'yoma echot shu chavushim arimonim." We don't find the machlokas that there's one shit in the Gemara that says it's an esrog, one shit that says chavushim or pomegranates. Elihu harais lohi bin meiv shinishtabish aleinu ha'inyun ashi noda mehem meharais ha'ela. These rais are not that because we don't know what it is. We don't. That we've seen from the time of Yeshua until now that they only took an esrog. And these rabbis are only trying to find some type of remez in the Torah that it is that Pri Eitz Hodo is an esrog. Rav David Halevi, who was based in Tel Aviv, makes a dirk in this Rambam. Says me Yeshua ad Otto. They took it from Yeshua until now. It didn't say from Moshe ad Otto. So he makes a deal that said they never took lulav and esrog in the desert. They only took it when they came into Eretz Yisrael. And it's actually mashma in the previous pasuk. It says ach b'chamisha Otto yom lechodesh shabbi on the 15th day of the seventh month. Otto chemes tivur zaret when you gather in the tivur, the produce of the land, to chogesh chag Hashem shivas yomim. And celebrate the Chag of Hashem 7 days. So it's only they only celebrate Sukkot when it's for Osbachem as Tavurus Ha'oretz. So I'm going to propose a question to you. Now we know that a Kriyat Hoda is an Esrog. How can you have a situation where an Esrog that doesn't have lemon genetic material is Osa, but an Esrog that does have lemon genetic material in its DNA is Mutta? But before that, before I answer that, I'm going to bring another scientific source. It's brought in the Proceedings of International Society of Citriculture in 2000. And there's a Professor Goldschmidt of Hebrew University who had a problem, had a question, that the different esrog trees have different morphology. They look different. The flowers are different. The esrogium are different. If you take, for example, the Yemenite esrog, it's much bigger than the normal esrogium. And it had similar features to citrus fruit that are found in India. So you want to know whether the Yemenite esrog was similar to all the other esrogium, or was it similar to the citrus fruit that are found in India. And so he did an experiment with 12 different esrogium using genetic markers. Took three from Yemen, Yemenite esrogium, two from Morocco, a Calabria from Kfar Chabad, two Italian, two Chazanish, a Brahman, and a subspecies. Hopefully everybody's got one of these sheets. You can see these different types from source 4. And it came out that all the esrogium had very similar genetic makeup in their DNA. And when there was polymorphism, when there was differences in the DNA, it was mainly related to, how do I put this, that the highest level of similarity of polymorphism is found in similar geographic areas. So, for example, Yemen and Moroccan esrogium had very, even though they are quite different, but they're in the DNA, they were very, very similar. The Italian, the Kfar Chabad esrog, the Calabria esrog, which was basically transposing a tree from Calabria in Italy to Kfar Chabad in Israel, had very, the DNA was very similar to the Italian esrogium. And the two Chazanish esrogium were also very similar. So we see that all the esrogium were very similar, and more importantly, they did not find any integration of lemon or citrus genomes. So there was no other citrus fruit genomes found in the esrog DNA in all 12 of them. So what is grafting? So if you look at source 2, which explains it, basically you have a root and you have a scion, a tree at the top, and they fuse the two together, and eventually there'll be like a band round where they actually are fused totally together. And the reason why they do grafting is because sometimes the tree where you're trying to get the fruit from isn't so good at growing in certain conditions. So, for example, if you take the esrog, the esrog is not just taken for us to take on sukkahs, it's also used mainly in the fragrance industry. And lifespan of an esrog is about 15 years. But if you graft it, it lasts about 50 years. Also, the esrog is affected by the frost, while a lemon tree, which is what's commonly grafted to, is not affected by the frost. So in order to get as much produce from the esrog tree, they graft it with a lemon tree. So if you look in Mishnayos, Shulchan Aruch, Rishonim, you won't find any mention of grafted esrogium being also mutter, no discussion at all, even though it was known to them. In the Mishnayos and Kalayim that discuss about grafting, and the Rambam in Kalayim as well, in the beginning of Kalayim, Aleph Daled, also discusses about grafting esrogium. But that's in Hilchos Kalayim. If you look in Hilchos Lulav Esrog, you won't find anything about whether a grafted esrog is also a mutter. The earliest opinion is the Al-Sheikh, 16th century, I think. And I'm not going to go through the shittas because I don't have time to go through, but if you look through the different shittas, there's some shittas that you can learn the svaras make it osur midoraisa, some of the svaras make it osur midorabanan. And based on the different svaras, it also comes out whether a second generation grafted esrog tree is also mutter or osur to take. That, so if you take seeds from an esrog, from a grafted tree, and you plant it, and those esrogim that grow from it, is that osur or mutter? And that's a machlokes based Ephraim and Chazanish. The Rama, who doesn't mention Shulchan Aruch, but mentions it in his Teshuvah, who says it's osur, gives three simonim of how you can recognize the difference between a grafted esrog and a non-grafted esrog. If you look in source 6, it's probably the easiest way to explain it. So on the right hand side is a standard esrog, on the left hand side is a lemon, which is the easiest thing to compare it to. So the remark gives three simonim. It says the outside is bumpy, so you look at the esrog, it's very bumpy compared to a lemon. The ukuts at the bottom of the esrog is indented, in the lemon it's sticking out. And the third simon it gives, but obviously this is going to make your esrog possible if you do it before Sukkot, is if you cut it in half, the pith, the white, is much thicker than compared to the lemon. The Olos Shabbos brings a fourth simon that says that the seeds are longitudinal in a esrog, and in a grafted esrog, they're latitudinal. So in esrog, they're vertical, in a lemon, horizontal. However, the Bechur Yaakov says that he's opened up many different esrogim and found no type of seder. There's a machlok as well, this is a simon or not. The Chassam Sofer had a problem that a lot of the grafted esrogim look very similar to the normal esrogim, and therefore he said that we can't rely on the outer simonim, but we have to have a masorah on it. We have to have a tradition. Just like by birds, the Torah says by birds that these are all the non-kosher birds, but we've got no idea what these birds are. So we have to have a masorah that says that this particular bird is kosher or to eat. So to by esrogim, you need to have a masorah, you have to have a tradition that this esrog is mutter or osur to use on sukkahs. So, is there genetic transfer through grafting? Or is the root stock is only supplying nutrients and hormones, which will affect the growth of the tree, but there's no actual transfer of genetic material. So, in Science 2009, they bring a science paper there. They used tobacco tree because that's the easiest way of doing the experiments, where they put genetic markers within the root base and the scion on top, and see whether there was transfer. And they found that there was no genetic transfer of nucleus DNA, but there was transfer of chlorophyll DNA, which is what turns light into energy. But that leakage of chlorophyll DNA was only very close to the graft where they grafted it. It weren't going to either end of the tree. So so fruit that's grown further up above the graft place or grown further down wouldn't have any transfer of DNA. But if you have, on a theoretical level, if a branch came out of the graft point, then you would have some transfer of DNA, even though it's not the Ica DNA of the tree. So, basically, there isn't any transfer of DNA. The rootstock is just supplying the hormones. So now I want to move on to talking about the different esrogim. Brands of esrogim. So if you look at source 4, top right, we'll start off with the Chazon Ish. And there's different stories of what happened exactly. And one story was that you used to take a Braverman esrog, which is actually on the bottom right. And this is the esrog that Maharil Diskin used to use. The other story is that you used to take a Yemenite esrog, which is the middle to the right. And then they started grafting esrogim in Yemnat Esrogim in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore he decided to go and look for his own Esrog. So he sent Rav Halpin to the foresters outside Safat, and he looked around, looked at the trees there, found that none of the tree that he looked at wasn't grafted at all, because you can see it, because it's like it's bulging out, and took it back to the Chazon Ish. And the Chazon Ish used it and then gave three seeds. One to
how did you see it wasn't grafted?
There's a bulge at the graft point where we have the top. So you can see where it's digging out. So they dug around to see whether it was grafted or not. And there's three. That's the Machlokes, Chazon Ish and Beis Ephraim, whether it depends on the Svaras, whether it's allowed or not, which I haven't got time to go into. So he gave three seeds, one to Rav Gedalia Nadel, one to Rav Michal Yehuda Lefkowitz, one to Rav Greenemann. And they then all Chazon Ish Esrogim came from those three sources. So one might ask that the Sam Sofer requires a Masorah. So how can the Chazon Ish use an Esrog from a wild tree? There's no Masorah on that tree, whether that's a grafted tree or not a grafted tree. So there's a Rashi in Chulin, which is discussing the Masorah bird, which is the source of the Chasam Sofer, why you need a Masorah. And he says that that a Talmud Chacham can be Koveya, even without a Masorah, that this bird is a kosher bird, even without any Masorah. So similarly here, the Chazon Ish has the power to be Koveya that this Esrog is a non-grafted Esrog. Lefkowitz's tree lasted for 50 years instead of the normal 15 years, and it was reported that the year he died in 2011, I wasn't sure whether it's Tovshin Aleph or Ayin Beis, and the tree started to wither and didn't produce fruit that year. I don't know whether it's still around or has died or not, but see the power of Lefkowitz. The next Esrog, which will answer our question, is the Shloimi Esrog. This is in the centre of number 4. And the story goes that Rav Chaim Noam and Rav Shloimi went to al-Pachem, which is outside Shechem, and found this wild tree, and again dug around to see that it wasn't grafted, and then brought it back to... And people used it for the aluminium. And Rav Benditz and Rav Rosner similarly wrote that this Esrog is not a grafted, it's not Morkod. And the Vishnitzer Rebbe used to request this Esrog as well. However, if you look at it closely, it's got signs of, or external signs of being a grafted Esrog. It's much smoother than the normal Esrogim. And its ukkutz is sticking out, it's not indented. So how did it happen, and how can they say that it's not Morkov? So they bring a Teshuva of Shlomo Zalman Orbach that says that natural cross-pollination is allowed. So what happened was they had this Esrog orchard next to a lemon orchard, and they had bees to pollinate the different trees, and they used to take the pollen from the lemon orchard and cross-pollinate it into the Esrog orchard. And this is where we would have a situation where you would actually have lemon genetic material in an Esrog that's mutter, but with a Morkov, with a grafted Esrog, we've shown before that basically you can't, there's no transfer of genetic material, and therefore, and that's Osser. So you have this strange situation. The Calibria Esrog, that's the next one, which is in source. Is to the left hand side. So the story goes, the Calibria is in southern Italy. It's based on the Alter Rebbe. The legend goes that when Hashem told Moshe, the Kachtem Lochem creates Hada, Moshe says, I've got no idea what that is. So Hashem put him onto a cloud and flew him to southern Italy and showed him what an Esrog is. And that's why the Chabad Hasidim are very mapped to get the Calibria Esrog. However, they started grafting these Esrogim because they're using it for the fragrance industry, and therefore they transferred some of the non-grafted trees to Kefach Chabad, and that's where the main stock of it is. While there is rather Gorelick, I think, of Milan, does certify some Esregim coming out of Italy, but most of the Esregim in Italy are actually grafted. The fourth one, before I move on, is the Moroccan Esreg, which is top left, and that usually doesn't contain any seeds. So we brought an Oda Shabbos that one of the simonim of an Esreg is the seeds. However, that's only if it's got seeds, but if it hasn't got seeds, then it's not ma'akev or not. That's just to answer that. I'm going to move on now to... most of the time they don't usually grow from seeds, they usually do it from shoots. So they take a branch from the tree and replant it. I can just move on to the Gartun. So if you look at the Calibria Esreg, that's probably the best picture I've got, I forgot to put one on, is that's got half a Gartun where there's an indentation in the middle of the Esreg. So that's the source four on the middle left hand side. And if Rav Sternbuch says this is even though it's not mentioned any earlier, he holds this is one of the signs of a non grafted Esreg. And if you look at source three, where there's some coins and a mosaic, you'll see that if you look on the left hand side of the coin, you see there's a gart over there, there's an indentation, and also the mosaic from the Beit Al-Fushul, it's up in Caesarea, that it's got a gart as well, it's indented. However, you should note that if you look on the right-hand side coin, that is from 65 years earlier from the Great Revolt, there's no indentation, there's no gart. So, is this unique to the Esreg? And is it a genetic based, or is it a physical phenomenon? So, it is unique to the Esreg. It's the only citrus tree that actually has this unique simon of having this squeezing, this gartle, but it's not genetic, it's physical. So, if you look at source 7, and the right-hand side here, right outside the bottom, you'll see the Esreg flower, and then on the left hand side is the start of Esreg growing out. And so there's pollen on the flower, so it's arranged like a ring like structure. And usually, as the fruit grows up, these anthers that contain the pollen usually fall off. But sometimes there's a delay and then falling off. And as the fruit grows up and you've got this ring, these anthers that are in a ring around the fruit, it causes a squeezing on the fruit and therefore you get this gartled or this indentation. It's purely a physical phenomenon, it's not a genetic phenomenon. And if you would open one up, the skin is affected, but the pericap, the layer underneath, is hardly, barely affected by it. So just to sum up with the Mishnah Berurah before I go into the archaeological interesting archaeological point, the Mishnah Berurah says that on Yom Tov Rishon you can't take a grafted, you can't rely on the simonim of the Rimah of being the external simonim being bumpy and the uppets is indented, but on Yom Tov Sheni you can rely on these external simonim. If one doesn't have an Esreg, then one shouldn't rely on a grafted Esreg all 7 days of Yom Tov. But if there's none around, there's two opinions in the Mishnah Berurah. One opinion says you should take it without a bracha, while the other opinion says you shouldn't take it at all because people might come to think that you can take a grafted Esreg on Yom Tov. If you look in source 3, back at these coins, very closely, you can see that there's a lulav in the middle, an S-rig at the bottom left. And on the two sides of the luluf, there's one hadas and one arava. Now we take three hadas and two aravas. So why is this so? So the Gemara in Sukkah brings three different shittas of how many hadas and aravas you should take. And Rabbi Akiva's opinion is that you take one hadas and one arava. Bar Kochba was very close to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva called him Mashiach. There's a very close relationship. And therefore we see from these coins that Bar Kochba paskened like Rabbi Akiva and not like later on what we do. I just want to finish off with a letter of Bar Kochba that was found in the Judean desert and brought to light by Yigal Yadin. And it's meant to be written by Bar Kochba. Shimon to Yehuda Bar Menashe, Kirat Arabaya. I have sent two donkeys. You shall send two men with them to Yonason Ben Bar Bayan and to Mesabla. They shall pack and bring back to you Lulav and Esrogim. You shall send others from your place and bring back Hadas and Arabas. See that they're tithe. Send them all to my camp. Our army is large. Shalom.
I think.